Yo, football fans, a day late but not a dollar short. Welcome to our weekly football recap on the Big D podcast. Before I bring in Alice, please subscribe, like, and share the Spunky Spectrum Sports YouTube page. Plenty of content on there, plenty more available coming. Also, check out the Big D podcast for your audio listeners on Spotify and Apple. So, joining us is the, what are we going to call you now, Beth? Unofficial fifth string quarterback of the Miami Dolphins and extra long snapper if available.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to be back as always, Dylan. Pleasure being here. Interesting week of week five of the NFL season. You know, some definitely some interesting results, some crazy finishes, a couple big touchdown performances by some superstars and some utility guys. But you know, it's like I said, it's a pleasure to be here, and we don't have to talk much about the Miami Dolphins this week.
Except that Skylar Thompson might be starting against Sir Kirk Cousins next week, but we'll leave that for another episode.
Yeah.
So thinking back to last night, we actually got a half decent primetime game. Thank God the Colts and Broncos game wasn't on, but the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Las Vegas Raiders in a good old AFC West 30-29 game. First off, it seems like Patrick Mahomes is the same guy no matter if the Chiefs are up 17 points or down 17 points, because the Chiefs overcame another big deficit. And the Raiders blew another big deficit, just like they did against the Arizona Cardinals. And secondly, but somebody called four touchdowns. I forgot his name. His initials are TK.
Yeah, I believe the man you're thinking of is a one Travis Kelce. I mean, it's so funny because if you don't look at this, if you didn't watch this game, you look at the stat line, you're looking down the Kansas City Chiefs receiving stats. You see Travis Kelce, 7 catches, 25 yards. You're like, man, they really kept Travis Kelce in check. And then you look a couple categories over to the touchdown section, and there's a big number 4 sitting there. I mean, it's just, you know, if you play fantasy football, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, I think it's safe to say that at the tight end position of fantasy football, it is Travis Kelce, and then it's a bunch of guys who might get you 5 points. I mean,
maybe Mark Andrews.
Yeah, maybe, you know, even Mark Andrews. I mean, it's impossible to match the consistency that Travis Kelce has, but, you know, Mark Andrews is definitely up there. But it's unbelievable what he can do at that position. He's, I mean, arguably one of the most dominant offensive weapons in the NFL. He's best friends with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, their partnership, their chemistry, it's fun to watch. I mean, it's an exciting offense. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the Vegas Raiders should have won that football game. I mean, if Davante Adams, you know, doesn't bobble that ball on the sideline and catches that ball cleanly, they're in field goal range with seconds left to be able to put that game away. So, you know, I mean, Vegas, obviously, they blew the big lead at the beginning, had a couple unfortunate, you know, plays down the stretch where things just didn't work out for them. But, you know, I mean, great teams win football games when they have to. And the Kansas City Chiefs, I think we all know, are a great football team.
You think Davante Adams should receive any discipline for what happened at the end of the game? Because everybody's saying, well, he slapped that guy. And I'm like, in the heat of the moment, I don't think he should be suspended. He should get a fine, but I don't think he should be suspended for at the end of the game.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, he didn't just slap him. I mean, he shoved the guy over. The guy's got a camera. I'm sure it's an expensive piece of equipment. You know, he issued it on Twitter. Davante Adams did an apology pretty much right after, saying he felt horrible after it happened, the second it happened. He said the guy ran in front of him. You know, watching the clip back, I mean, the cameraman, it's not like he didn't really just appear out of nowhere from what I was seeing. It's not like he just, you know, Davante Adams wasn't looking. I mean, in my eyes, I think it was a bit of a bad look, to say the least. And I think he might be, I think it's suspension worthy. I think it's at least in a conversation. You know, I mean, You can't do that. I mean, I don't care. You're a grown man on a football field. You're playing football as your career. I get it. I mean, the pressure, the stress, it's one of, you know, you've got millions of people. There's so much money on the line and everything. You want to be able, you know, you're disappointed when you lose a game like that, but you can't take it out on a cameraman who's making 1% of your salary, who's just there to do his job. He was in the wrong place at the right time. And I get, I mean, Devonta Adams is taking his frustration out, but you can't take that out on another person. I mean, it's definitely going to be a hefty fine. I honestly think it, I mean, you know, you never know with Roger Goodell and his suspension policy. I mean, some things, we don't even have to get into that because everyone knows how ridiculous it is, but I could see a one game suspension coming out of it. I just think, you know, you've got to be able to keep your composure no matter how upset you are about the result of the game. I mean, these are real people. I mean, and yes, I understand that these players are real people too, but you could take your frustrations out on you can punch a locker, you can punch a wall on the way down the hallway, but you don't got to take it out physically on another person. And I think just the fact that there was a physical, I mean, the guy's pressing charges, I'm reading and stuff. I think it honestly, I mean, it's close. I think it's definitely gonna be a hefty fine, but I could see a one game suspension out of it. But I got a question for you, Don. Going back to the inside the gridiron. I mean, the Las Vegas Raiders scored a touchdown late in the game. How much? There was 4:27 left in the football game. Brought them within 1 point. And the Vegas Raiders made the decision to go for two and take the lead. What do you think about that call? I mean, obviously you're playing a division rival. You're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a game you really want to win. But do you think that was the right call?
It was the only call to make. Listen, against Patrick Mahomes, you don't play for a tie. You play for the win, baby. And it may have been a little early, but I think you play for the win. Because guess what? Even if you get the two-point conversion, Patrick Mahomes has got practically a day and a half for him. He can get up and down the field with the best, and we saw in the AFC division round where you only need 13 seconds. And secondly, it's not like your defense has been stopping Mahomes all night. I mean, they've scored four touchdowns. So against a Patrick Mahomes, a Peyton Manning, a Tom Brady, you play differently. I mean, we saw Bill Belichick go for 4th and 2 and win his own 28-yard line. Right. Because he didn't want to give Peyton Manning the ball. I love the call. It's a gamble. Las Vegas is the gambling capital of of the world. Unfortunately, this gamble didn't work out.
You know, Dylan, I absolutely see your point. I think you make a great point, and it's definitely something arguable, and I 100% see your side. But I'm gonna take the other side of this just because I'm looking at it in a slightly different way. I've got to think, yes, you're giving the ball back to Patrick Mahomes. But again, like you said, there's 4.5 minutes left in that football game. You know Patrick Mahomes is going to put a drive together. You know what's going to happen. So why put yourself behind the eight ball? If Patrick Mahomes has 4.5 minutes to drive down the field, whether you're down one or whether Patrick Mahomes is down one or it's a tie game, he's going to drive down there anyway. But if you miss that two-point conversion, if you can hold the Chiefs to a field goal, now it's a four-point game. If the Chiefs score a touchdown, it's an 8-point game. Then you have to get the 2-point conversion on the next touchdown if you get that opportunity to score. If you kick that extra point, it's a tie game. Whatever the Chiefs do, you just have to match it to send that game into overtime. I mean, 4.5 minutes left. I understand going for the kill. I would get that if there was 45 seconds left in that game. And even like you said, I mean, that's enough time for Patrick Mahomes, but going for the kill with 4.5 minutes left when you're probably going to get the ball back, I don't understand. I don't think the reward is worth the risk. I mean, with 4.5 minutes, Kansas City's going to score again. And with you missing that, like I said, I mean, it just puts you behind the eight ball because now you're 1 point back. So a field goal doesn't do anything for you. If you score another touchdown, you're going to need the 2-point conversion anyway. I just think you kick the extra point, you level it up, and whatever Kansas City does, you either try and match it or beat it on hopefully a last drive that you get in the game. But you know, I don't really see the point of going up one as opposed to being tied with 4.5 minutes left. But I definitely see your point. I understand the going for the win. I just think there was too much time for it.
Ooh, a spicy disagreement on 2-point conversions. I'm liking where this episode's going.
Me too. But, you know, that's not the only football game that happened over the weekend. You know, there was another division rival game that we saw this weekend with possibly the greatest of all time at his position, some might say. The Cincinnati Bengals and Baltimore Ravens, that's who we're talking about. Justin
Greatest Tucker. Of all time, you mean? Wait, you're saying Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson's better than Tom Brady?
I'm saying Justin Tucker, sir.
Okay. Okay. Adam Vinatieri might have something to say about it.
He very well might, but you know, Justin Tucker, I mean, he's been the face of for the brand, the face of the special teams units for probably the last 10 or so years, I'd say. I mean, with you know the legends, the Janikowskis, the Vinatieris, the Vanderjacks of the early 2000s up to the 10s, kind of retiring and leaving the league. It's pretty much been the Justin Tucker show since then. And, you know, he proved it yesterday. He called himself, I don't know if you saw the interview after the game, he called himself the system kicker, which has gotten a lot of people riled up. But what do you see? What did you see from that Cincinnati Bengals Baltimore Ravens game? The Ravens finally won a close one, huh?
Well, it seems like every AFC North game, no matter if it's Ravens, Steelers, Bengals, Ravens, Browns, Steelers, goes down the wire. Like literally every AFC North team decided in the last minute. And secondly, about time the Ravens A won a home game and B won a close game, because it seems like going back to last year, the Ravens couldn't win at home. And B, you know this because the Ravens blew a big lead to the Dolphins week two. The Ravens just couldn't hold on to a big lead at home, which sounds odd because every time I see a John Harbaugh team, the Ravens play sound football, run the football, play good defense, and Justin Tucker kicking 58-yard field goals. Oh, yeah, not Lamar Jackson making plays, even though one takeaway from this game, Cincinnati has got a real underrated defense. Don't have the kind of star power you would see from, like, the Rams or the 49ers, but the Bengals play really sound defense, really confused Lamar, didn't give him really any running lanes. But Lamar and Mark Andrews made just enough big plays. And for the Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase might be a very explosive, very important receiver, but I would argue in a way T. Higgins is more important to the Bengals' success, because if you have that security blanket, he can get you 2nd and 7, 3rd and 5. Without that, Cincinnati's offense lacked that security, and Baltimore basically did not allow Chase to be a factor. I mean, Burrow was basically throwing into Hayden Hurst and Tyler Boyd.
Yeah.
Not exactly the weapons I wanted in a ride floating game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's this Bengals team's weird this year, man, huh? I mean, it's, you know,
three losses by what, 8 points?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a Super Bowl hangover or what. I mean, obviously they've got the talent. They upgraded the offensive line. They seem like they didn't really lose anyone in the offseason. I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, I mean, you know, when you go into the Super Bowl, you're going to have a tougher schedule the next season than you had before. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, they beat the Dolphins and the Jets. They lose to Cooper Rush and the Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, it's just a weird season for them. It's a weird start for the season. And same with the Ravens, too. I mean, these got to be some of the most kind of mind-boggling teams in the NFL that I've been watching this season. I mean,
I will say this. I think the Cincinnati Bengals are the unluckiest team in the NFL. I think if and when T. Higgins comes back, the Cincinnati Bengals are still the favorite in the division. I'm still not 100% sold on Baltimore's receiving corps because they traded Marquise Brown. Bateman's in and on the line. It's basically Lamar and Mark Andrews. They're not even giving J.K. Dobbins the ball.
Yeah, you're right. And And you know, the one redeeming factor, like you said, I mean, you don't think it's over for the Bengals. I have to agree with you because I'm looking at the Bengals' upcoming schedule. I mean, they've got the Saints, the Jameis Winston-less Saints next week. So, I mean, you've got to think the Bengals should win that football game. And next week they've got the Falcons, who, I mean, still haven't figured out how to use Kyle Pitts. So I don't necessarily think the Bengals are too worried about Atlanta. Then they've got the Browns, who are a tough test, but again, have run into some speed bumps and hiccups along the season. They've got the Panthers after that, who, you know, the Panthers are just in a complete disarray at the moment. Then the Steelers again, they got a revenge game there after week one. And the Tennessee Titans, the Chiefs, I mean, they've got some definitely winnable games like upcoming on this stretch. So I agree with you. I don't think the Bengals are done. I think there's definitely potential for them to get things moving, get things on the right track. But it's just a weird start for them so far this season.
Yeah, especially because Joe Mixon never got going. And then on Sunday night, he's finally making plays. He averaged, let me see, he averaged over 5 yards per carry the other night. So, I mean, it's a long season. You don't want to panic just based on one game. It's weird. Like, Cincinnati's three losses, you could argue the Bengals could have won a couple of them. I mean, they outplayed Pittsburgh week one. I mean, outplayed Dallas second half week two, and then basically played Baltimore pretty even from the second quarter on.
And the funny thing about that, too, is I would say if the Miami Dolphins had Tua against the Cincinnati Bengals, they win that football game. So it's just, you know, it's just the parody of the NFL. You never know what's going to happen on any given week. Any team can beat any team. And it's just fun to watch, man. I love being in the middle of football season.
Objection. Cincinnati wins that game, no matter if Dan Marino's under center.
I mean, fair to say, but that's a 12-point game with a backup quarterback getting thrown into the game. I mean, we'll never know. That's the truth of the matter. But
all right. So how about this, Alex? We've gone over games, but I want you to name the most overrated defensive player in the NFL. I'll name the most overrated offensive player in the NFL. Then you name the most underrated offensive player in the NFL, and I'll name the most underrated defensive player. So most overrated defensive player, please.
The most overrated defensive player. That is a good one. How about you go with your most underrated offensive player first and give me a second, because I got a couple names in mind. I want to pick which one I want to say.
All right. I've got my most overrated offensive player, Aaron Rodgers. How did the Green Bay Packers not score a point against Daniel Jones with like his top four receivers out in London? I mean, Aaron Rodgers may be the most talented quarterback we've ever seen, but he's only won one Super Bowl. You're freaking kidding me? I mean, look at this year. They didn't score a point. I don't think they scored a point second half against the Bucs. They didn't score a point second half against Daniel Jones and the Giants. They barely got the win against a third string rookie from Western Kentucky. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, you're great. But in terms of quarterbacks right now, I take Lamar Jackson. I would take 10 to 12 quarterbacks over Aaron Rodgers right now, period.
Wow, there you go. The man has said it himself. And honestly, I'm going to kind of piggyback on you for a little bit. As far as overrated defensive player, I'm not really going to go with a player. I'm going to go with the unit. And I think the Green Bay Packers defense is overrated. I think the Green Bay Packers team as a whole is overrated. But this defensive unit, I mean, yes, they've held some teams to low-scoring games, but it just seems like something is going on in that Green Bay Packers organization that is not right. Obviously, they lose Davante Adams in the offseason, and Aaron Rodgers had the storylines of the offseason, whether he was going to leave, whether he was going to retire, what was going to go on with him. But I've just been watching these Green Bay Packers football games. I watched the morning game against the Jets, and it just doesn't seem like this team has the same drive, has the same attitude, has that Lambeau Field mean, you know, up north, just focus that we've seen from the Green Bay Packers before. I don't think losing Davante Adams, and I know I'm talking about defense, I'm getting there in a second. I don't think losing Davante Adams should have been this massive bomb for the Green Bay Packers that it has become. I mean, yes, they're the three and two football team, but I don't like what I see from the Green Bay Packers at all. I was not surprised for a second that the Giants beat them on Sunday. And honestly, I think this defensive unit, I mean, Daniel Jones is not the greatest football quarterback in the NFL. They put up 27 points. I mean,
and he outplayed Aaron Rodgers.
The last week, I mean, when the Green Bay Packers played the New England Patriots, that game went to overtime against Bailey Zappi. I mean, it just seems like this defense, obviously they're not getting a whole lot of help from Aaron Rodgers in the offense, but I have a good friend who's a Packers fan, and he was telling me that this Packers defense is elite. And if this Packers defense was elite, they would be able to, it sounds weird to say, but carry Aaron Rodgers through the season. And, you know, I'm not seeing the dominance that I expected from that Packers defense. I'm not seeing the you know, overall composure from the Packers organization that I expected. So I'm going to go with the unit. I'm going to go with the Packers defense as overrated going into week 6 of the NFL season.
Okay, so most underrated offensive player then.
Most underrated offensive player, I am going to go with, I had it in my head. You said underrated offensive player, correct?
Yes.
Where is it? I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank. Underrated offensive player. You kind of threw me off of the segment a little bit, Dylan. You do yours first. I'm gonna get back to you on it.
My most underrated defensive player is Fred Warner of the San Francisco 49ers, because in terms of defensive stars on that team, you probably think of Nick Bosa or when Richard Sherman when he played there. But Fred Warner, maybe the most underappreciated middle linebacker. Like, every game I'm watching with the 49ers, making plays. This guy might be the best middle linebacker in football. People don't know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm gonna go with a guy for underrated offensive player that has bounced around in the league a little bit, and it seems like, you know, he's playing for a team who no one had any expectations for this season. And unfortunately for him, he was not able to do enough to get the victory this week, but he still put up a very impressive showing. I'm going to go with Geno Smith.
I think,
and just because of the label underrated. I mean, I'm not saying that Geno Smith is a top 5, top 10 quarterback in the NFL, but everyone anytime someone talks about Geno Smith, he is trash. I mean, no one ever has a nice thing to say about Geno Smith. And Geno Smith is doing some work. I mean, this week, you know, 16 to 25, he didn't throw the ball a whole lot, but 268 yards, 3 touchdowns through the air. You know, I mean, did you see that bomb he threw to Tyler Lockett? I mean, that was on the money. I'm not saying that Geno Smith is a face of the franchise, he's going to be the guy for the Seattle Seahawks going on. But underrated offensive player, I think Geno Smith is underrated. I mean, they put up 32 points on the New Orleans Saints. Obviously, they didn't come around and win that game, but we expected the Seahawks to be 0-5 at this point of the season. The fact that they're 2-3, I mean, I'm giving credit to Geno Smith. I think he's done a better job than people expected him to do, and I think he's putting the Seahawks in a position where they're actually in football games, when I really don't think Seahawks fans or NFL fans in general gave them a shot to be in football games this season.
Well, it helps that DK Metcalf sure looks like DK Metcalf, because nobody's been able to stop him. Not even Marshawn Lattimore could stop him.
You're right about that. I mean,
although Marshawn Lattimore can stop Mike Evans, but yet can't stop
DK. And we were talking about at the beginning of the segment, there was a superstar scored 4 touchdowns. There was a utility guy who scored 4 touchdowns. You know, that was Taysom Hill. And if it wasn't for a Taysom Hill masterclass, then the Seahawks beat the Saints on Sunday. So, you know, Geno Smith, there you go. I'm giving you the credit that you deserve. Underrated NFL offensive player. But the time has come to our favorite segment of the show. It's a segment you all know and love. It is our weekly rant. And I went off last week about the NFL and NFL media and their handling of the Tua Tagovailoa situation. And Dylan, I think, is even angrier than I am this week. So Dylan, I know what you're talking about. The floor is yours.
Alex, did you see the roughing the passer, Brady Jarrett's roughing the passer tackle on Tom Brady this past Sunday?
I sure did.
Did you see Chris Jones roughing the passer hit on Derek Hall last night?
I sure did.
And what looked illegal about either play?
I would say absolutely nothing.
And what happened on both of those plays?
That little yellow handkerchief that we all love came flying out of that referee's pocket.
And guess what he said?
He said, unsportsmanlike conduct, roughing the passer, defense number, whatever number you are.
And I'm just seeing the NFL's being overprotective based on what happened with your quarterback. But right. This has become the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen. Now, I can remember many years ago when the NFL basically called the penalty anytime somebody sneezed on Tom Brady. But this is softer than a Cottonelle toilet paper roll. What are we doing? What are we doing? Listen, Grady Jarrett legally sacked Tom Brady, which would have given Atlanta the ball back with 3 minutes left, a chance to win the game because the Falcons were down six. They get a touchdown, win the game. And the game's over because roughing the quarterback, and then Tampa could run out the clock. This has become ridiculous. Why are we all of a sudden calling roughing the quarterback when literally that's the only place you hit him? If you hit him below the knees, it's a penalty. If you hit him in the head, you either A, out of the game, B, the quarterback's either in some concussion protocol, and C, you're going to get a big fine afterwards. So, I mean, where do you hit him? Grady Jarrett hit Tom Brady and then gently salted and laid him to the ground. And then last night, Chris Jones was even called for an even more egregiously soft penalty. Not sure egregiously is an adverb, but it's my podcast. I'm going to make my own rules. But I think it has come to the point where the NFL is softer than toilet paper, softer than my koalas over here. And either we play 7-on-7 where defensive linemen and offensive linemen don't play, when we figure out a way where you can hit a quarterback and not be called for a flag. And I know the NFL is trying to like maybe make it where like roughing the passer could be reviewed like pass interference was after the Rams Saints NFC title game a few years ago. But this is ridiculous. If that call happened in the Super Bowl and you call roughing the passer, and by the way, Jerome Boger's crew was the same one who called that bogus roughing the passer call on Josh Allen last week. So it is ridiculous that games are decided based on soft roughing the passer calls. I want to see games decided with great quarterback play, great defensive play, running back, wide receiver. I don't want to be decided by zebras. It is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I feel bad with what happened to your Dolphins because you basically played with a 7-round rookie from Kansas State this past weekend. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
It is. I mean, and the crazy thing about, you know, I'm glad you kind of mentioned the Skylar Thompson thing, because Teddy Bridgewater did not suffer a concussion on Sunday. He got checked for concussion protocol. He passed concussion protocol. And then the NFL spotter apparently said that he saw Teddy Bridgewater stumble, and because of the new Tua rule, that he was not allowed to re-enter the game, which there's no video evidence. There's clips of every angle of the play after the play. Teddy Bridgewater arguing with the referee about the safety call after the play happened. Teddy Bridgewater did not stumble. There was no concussion. It was tested negative for a concussion. It was just the NFL, obviously, making a point against the Miami Dolphins because of what happened with the Tua situation, which, you know, it is what it is. But with these penalties, it's ridiculous. I mean, the hit on Tom Brady, I mean, they they say that he landed on Tom Brady and drove him to the ground, I guess.
Landed on Tom Brady. So what of us? So
exactly.
So now all of a sudden, is a space shuttle going to land on Tom Brady? Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand. I'm completely on your side. I don't understand.
Is that going to land on Tom Brady?
I don't know how you're supposed to tackle someone and then do the limbo or the cha-cha slide or whatever you have to do to make sure you land 4 feet away from them. But I mean, it's going to be like COVID 5 feet policies at this point when it comes to quarterbacks. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, obviously I have certain feelings about the Tom Brady treatment and the calls and the sort of love that Tom Brady gets from the NFL. But you know, Derek Carr isn't Tom Brady, and it happened again yesterday. So it's just, I mean, but with Patrick Mahomes standing on the other side, maybe that had something to do with it. Who knows? But it is ridiculous. It's outrageous. I do think, like you said, if the NFL can make that a reviewable play, just like the pass interference, which doesn't seem like the pass interference gets reviewed much anymore anyway. But I do think that would be a nice addition just for those rare situations that there is a not even rare one of those common situations where the referee decides to take the game in his own hands. And it's like you said, it's not something we want to see. We want to see these games won by the athletes. We want to see these games won by the guys who get paid to play football, not by the guys who get paid to watch it and throw a yellow flag out of their pocket every once in a while. So it's ridiculous. It's frustrating. It's annoying. I'm all for player safety, but there's got to be a point where you who get paid a significant amount of money to referee a sport should be able to do that job correctly. There's not too many NFL referees in the world. I mean, you've got to be at the top of your game. You've got to be the best of the best. And if we're seeing, I mean, whether it's blown calls, whether it's flags, whether it's, you know, anything like that, I mean, this is the highest level. We expect these athletes to be performing at the highest level. We should be expecting the referees to be performing at the highest level as well. And I think it's safe to say that lately that has not been the case.
Boy, you got me sweating now.
I know. I mean, it's a good topic. It's good. It's a good rant. I'm fully with you on there. You know, we've kind of butted heads a couple times in this episode, but I'm fully with you on that rant, sir. It's sickening. It's really sickening.
All right. So thanks for hopping on, Alex. Hopefully your Dolphins get back on track this week. I can't figure out why my Jags winning. Why my Jags can't beat the Houston. It's 9 straight wins for the Texans against my Jags. What is this?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dylan. It's a pleasure as always. I wish your Jaguars luck. You know, you'll probably beat some world beaters coming up soon. I missed Tua Tagovailoa, man. I'll tell you that much. But fins up.